Hi, my name's Sarah, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Sarah.
Thank you, Richie. Oh, hey, there you are, for sharing. I related a lot, especially to the balls in the face part. Right on. But I did, and thank you. And, I'm nervous. It's like I feel like I'm going to, like, throw up and have a heart attack all at the same time right now. Like, who needs Coke? Just speak at a meeting. This here, way better than drugs. Yeah, so if I do die, I love you. And remember me. I don't know if the rock star had anything to do with it or the Sharpie. Shit's going to get weird for, like, the next, how long am I talking?
Half hour.
I'm really sorry. But after that, there's dodgeball, and that's going to be fun. So let's just get weird for a minute. I'm really grateful to be here. Thank you for asking me to speak. I am on the Salty Paw Committee, and it means a lot to see all these people come out and show up and support and be together in sobriety, you know, in fellowship, in recovery, you know, throw some balls, have some fun. You know, it really, really, really means a lot, and that's what we're here for. That's what we do this for, you know, to be able to stay sober another day and have some fun in the process. And so thank you guys for coming. I'm just super grateful. I have everything I need right now. You know, I've got a meeting, I've got God, I've got my sobriety, I have you guys, this fellowship, I've got a rock star and some cigarettes, and, you know, I've got my life. Like, I couldn't need anything else in this moment, you know? I'd like to win the lottery, but, you know, that's one day. But right here, right now, in this moment, I have everything I need, and I couldn't be more grateful. And, you know, that's one of the biggest gifts that I've gotten in my sobriety is that if I can just be here, you know, be here now in this moment, everything is great. Everything is good. You know, look around. We're all here. We're all alive another day. We're all here for the same reason, you know, just trying to make it another day. And sometimes the further along I get in my sobriety, I kind of forget, you know, that we're here trying to survive, you know, instead of dying out there. And today we get to be together here, you know, and to look around and see that we're all in this together, we're all doing this together. It makes me so fucking grateful because we all come from different walks of life and different places and different neighborhoods and different stories, you know, and some of us have been to jail and some of us not, and some of us in psych wards and some of us not, and rehabs and whatnot and whatever. You know, we all come from a different path, but all of our journeys brought us here together in this moment right now, and it's fucking perfect, and I couldn't want anything else in my life. And so thank you for being a part of my journey. So what happened? I was born, and it was pretty much all downhill from there. And then I got really loaded, and now I'm here now. So that's it. Let's play some dodgeball. But no, but really, I was born, and, you know, I was thinking about it today just a little bit, knowing that I was going to speak about the whole, like, you know, being born thing. It's kind of inevitable. You have no choice in the matter. Like, your parents do stuff, and then you're born. And you don't get to pick who your parents are, and unless you're part of a religion who thinks that you do, but I don't know. I'm not. And that's like some crazy sci-fi shit to me, but it's cool, would make a good movie. You know, and I was thinking about how I had forgotten, but I was thinking about how my dad wasn't at the hospital when I was born. He was on a business trip. Well, my dad was a drug smuggler and he embezzled money. And I thought the life of crime, you got to make your own schedule. So I still don't quite understand why he missed that day, because I don't know why you can't call in sick to the whole, like, I have to mule drugs across the border job, you know, but he wasn't there. And that's kind of how we started. That's how I was brought into this world. And that's my family, if that kind of sums up for you what kind of family that I come from. I come from a long line of addicts and alcoholics. And a lot of them are sober, thank God, and a lot of them aren't. And I've lost a lot of family members to this disease. And this program has saved a lot of my family at the same time. So it's something I'm very familiar with and something that I've grown up with. And, you know, my parents, when they were married, They were really good. You know, my dad was a con artist, and my mom was super codependent and just loaded lit all the time, so she was fine, and because she had what she needed. And they were really good at making everything look okay on the outside, you know. And I grew up in L.A. I'm from California. I moved out here in just October of last year. And my parents, you know, it was a roller coaster of life. We had a lot of money. That's what happens when you have this kind of life of, you know, crime and illegal money and that kind of stuff. So we were ballers and we're living at the top, and then we're living at grandma's house. And then we're back living on the top again, and then we're living in, like, you know, my dad's shop for whatever job was happening at the time. Like, almost like a place like this and, like, an extra room with a bed in it. And then we're living, you know, the life of luxury again, and then it's taken away. And that was kind of my life. So I learned to escape really early on. I just wasn't I couldn't handle. You know, we're born without these kind of coping skills, and you know, that's where later on, you know, drugs and alcohol become the thing that we self-medicate with, at least for me. But I used to stick my head in the couch when I would come home from school. That was my first escape. Like, literally in the corner of the couch, I'd stick my head in there, like, what is it, an ostrich that puts their head in the sand, right? I was like an ostrich. I was a weird kid. Not much has changed, but... And I would be there for like hours, you know, in the couch. Nobody could see me. I'm gone. You know what I mean? And this is like elementary school. Like, it's right off the bat weirdo. And like, I was just in the couch and no one talked to me. Nobody tried to pull me out of the couch. Like, they all just went on with their lives around me because I really thought I had disappeared. But the one thing that I did like about my parents were their fancy parties that they would throw. Because then there would be all these people, and everybody was dressed really nice, and everybody was really attractive, and maybe not, but, you know, they looked like it. And they had these, that's when the nice dishes would come out, and the pretty glasses, and the champagne would be bubbling, and I remember when the lights would reflect off the bubbles in the glass, how beautiful it looked. And I was like, I want that. And those were the times, clearly, that we had money. Because there was no champagne at the other times, you know what I mean? That was like the boxed wine, and that didn't look as good. But so early on as a child, I learned, A, if I stick my head on the couch, I'm gone. Nobody knows. I can disappear completely. B, champagne looks really great. When you have money, things are good. So I wanted money, and I wanted to drink. And that's when I knew from like the age of six and up is I can't wait till I can drink, and I can't wait till I can start working so I can have money, so I can have this life. And that's what I wanted, and I just was not present in school. I didn't care about kids my age. I didn't care about anything going on. I wanted to be 30. Like, that was my whole life, was just trying to be 30. I'm 31 now, and I'll tell you, it's not all it's cracked up to be for anybody who's not, you know, hit their 30s yet. Like, hold on to your youth, because the only thing that's happened is I'm older, and, like, the other day I had to buy, like, wrinkle cream. You know what I mean? Like... The whole dream of, like, you know, living like a boss with the money and the champagne and the popping bottles are gone, and it's like, which cream is better for my face? Like, that's what 30 is today, but I'm sober through it, and at least I made it. I didn't even think I was, at a certain point, I didn't think I was going to make it to this age, the path that I was going. But my parents made it look really attractive, and they talk about, you know, this is based on attraction, not promotion. Well, so is that life, too. You know, and it works for us. What looks good is what I want. If it feels good, tastes good, smells good, I want it. I want it. I want all of it. And I was in a big hurry to grow up. So my first opportunity to drink was the summer of seventh grade. I mean, I had taken sips off my parents, but like go to a party and get wasted. I was 13 years old, and I was like, yes, sign me up. Smoked a joint. Drink some jungle juice, like way too much, and it tastes sweet, so you don't think you're gonna get like that wasted. Well, I was like the girl that was face down at the party. It was a whole mess. I won't go into the whole thing. I pretended I was older than I was. There was college people there. It was like a disaster. They found out how old I was. I went running out crying, like, and I went home. Yeah, it was bad. I was like, I'm 17 or 13, you know what I mean? And like, well, boobs happened at 13, you know? So it's like, you could get away with shit. I got boobs, I got jungle juice or whatever, you know? I got a joint. Like, I smoked a cigarette that night for the first time. Like, go big or go home. I did it all. And I was embarrassed and humiliated, and I got really sick, and I threw up on myself. I threw up on their couch, and all I could think was, I can't wait to do that again. That was the best night of my life, because I finally could be here now. I wasn't the six-year-old trying to be 30, and I wasn't the kid with my head in the couch pretending like everybody was gone around me and I was just left to myself. I wasn't trying to be here. I wasn't trying to be there. I wasn't lost in books. I wasn't, you know, I was in that moment. I wanted to be where I was in that moment, even though I don't remember the moment the next day. I remember that I wanted to be there. And I couldn't wait to get back to that place again, because for that first time, I could just kind of, like, be still. I wasn't really still. I was probably dancing inappropriately, but I was in the moment. And that's where I so badly wanted to be. And,
Yeah.
Okay. And I chased that ever since. I never put it down. That was 13. I got sober at 23. I ran at that for 10 years, for a decade strong. I never took a break from it. You know, my sobriety date is October 11, 2004. You know, I walked into the rooms and I've stayed. You know, I'm so grateful for that experience. I love this fucking program. But I ran hard for 10 years, and that's all I cared about. My primary purpose was to get wasted. I didn't care what it was. I was a trash can. If it was alcohol or drugs or my first, you know, at 12, actually, this funny that the Sharpie was up here. I was writing down the price for Coke. I used to huff these little markers, like, in class, and I remember it was, like, history or some shit. We were sitting there, like, what, you want to try? And we're sitting there. Does it still work? And we're like, huffing these, like smelling these markers, you know what I mean? I was like 11, 12 years old and we were getting lightheaded. I was like, fuck yeah. And I remember another friend of mine, we're like, if that works, she had a four-wheeler and we would take the top of the gas off of it. It would sit there and huff the gas on this four-wheeler. Like, that's worse than crack, you know what I mean? Like, that's so bad. You could just die, but it's there, it's free. It was her dad's gas, like there's an endless supply. And I'd get on and huff it, then I'd fall off the four-wheeler, probably die for a couple seconds, come back to life, and then she'd fall off, and then I'd get, and then that's what we would do after school, is just this four-wheeler thing. And then it moved to paint and dust off and all that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? Because I was chasing that before I got the opportunity to finally pick up the real thing, which was hard liquor, and I loved it, you know what I mean? I didn't have to, like, fall off the four-wheeler anymore. I didn't have to, like, smell like gasoline or accidentally inhale some of it and get really sick. I got what my parents had had the whole life. I got that drink. I didn't get the pretty glass. I got it in a red cup. It was my cup, and I cherished that cup. And I didn't put that cup down for 10 years. And I would take whatever you gave me. I didn't even need to know what it was. I had no care for my life. I didn't care if I lived or died. I didn't know I didn't care. I just didn't care. I was just existing. For 10 years, I just existed. And my primary purpose was just to get wasted. And that's all I cared. What do you have that I want? And I don't even care what it is, but if it's going to make me feel something, then I want it. Because I can't handle the way I feel when I don't have these things. And I also can't handle the fact that I don't feel, because I've learned to turn it off. And so I need something. I need that. That's who I am. You know, I have a lot of, there was a lot of, you know, all kinds of substances that I used. I liked them all. You know, I wasn't prejudiced against any of them. My drug of choice was pot. I loved it, right? Yes, pot. And... And I was functional, because I learned from my parents, if you make everything look okay on the outside, then nobody knows what's really going on in here. So I had an apartment, and I had a job, and I got a decent paycheck, and I had a car, and I had those things, barely, you know, barely, like the lights got shut off, you know what I mean? The car ran out of gas, you know, I had to borrow money, like I had to like cry to my phone company and tell them that like I let some, what was the story I gave them one time when I had like a $1,000 phone bill? Oh, that I was like doing this like community service stuff and letting people come from other countries and staying at my house, and I didn't have an international calling plan set up and they were using my phone and I cried and I'm gonna kill myself. Like, I would go to any lengths and they're like, well, now it's $140. We're really sorry for that. I learned from my dad how to be a con artist. And I would just con my way through life and make it so it was somewhat manageable for me to continue to live the life that I wanted to live. And I went to work barely, but I was there, you know, late, bloodshot eyes, sick, puking in the back. You know, there was days missed, but I was there. I also worked with other alcoholics. We also drank at work. So I worked in an industry in LA where it was like cocaine and booze and this and that. And so it was acceptable. I definitely got on their nerves because I think I took it to the next level. But I was there somehow. You know, I couldn't, like with my rent, they wouldn't take my checks. They were no good. So I had to get money orders. So I'm the girl at 7-Eleven at 3 o'clock in the morning wasted. Like, I need a money order, you know, for $800 for my rent or whatever. Like, that was my life. But to me, I've got an apartment. I live on my own. I'm self-supporting. I don't have my parents helping me with anything. I've got this. I'm a fucking boss. Like, I've got this. And I was just a scared little girl that had no idea what was going on in my life or how to get to the next place in life. And I wanted so badly to not be in whatever this was anymore and be here. I knew there was happiness somehow through all this shit. And there was some fucked up shit that went on from being born, you know, to then. You know what I mean? We all have our trauma. There's abuse. There's all kinds of things that happen out there on the streets, you know, in your family. Like, there's stuff that happens, you know. And I medicated. Like, you know, I talked about pot. Like, I had to have pot. You know, they say that marijuana is not addictive, but I could not go a day without smoking pot because I couldn't make a decision until I smoked first. I couldn't tell you if I liked you unless I smoked first. I couldn't tell you that it was cool that you like me, but you also like my friend unless I smoke first, because then once I smoke, it's all good, man. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing wrong. Everything's all good. So I thought I was like this peace-loving hippie. I was just fucking stoned all the time. Like, that. I wasn't at any protest. I wasn't like saving trees or whales and shit. I was just high, you know? And I had like a Bob Marley poster on my wall and like the hemp necklace. And I was like, peace, man. You know, and telling my friends like all about like life and how to be, you know, like just this loving, kind, sharing, you know, earthy person, but I was just fucking high, you know, that's all that was happening. And, but I needed that. I couldn't, I'd have all this anxiety through the day because I don't know how I did it, but I made it through work without, well, I took pills at work. That's how I did it. So I, because then you don't smell like anything. And Klonopin would make the day fly. All of a sudden I'm like, how the fuck is it 6 o'clock? It was just 10 in the morning. This is great. So, you know, but I justified it because I take like a half or like one. I wasn't taking like 40 like other people were. But I'd have to have that. You know, it wasn't prescribed. I got it from the guy at the bar. But like, you know, but like I was like, you know, I thought I called myself the pharmacist and I gave myself my own prescriptions. And I'd give myself my Klonopin so I could deal with work. Then I'd get off and I'd run home and I'd like smoke my weed, you know, and then I would grab my $2 Chuck. We have Trader Joe's out here, but they don't have wine. But in L.A., they have the $2 red wine, which is like the greatest thing. And I had my Costco-sized bottle of Grey Goose. It was like, I had no ice because there was no room. I had to choose between ice trays and vodka because it was like this big for the big one. You know what I mean? Like I could get people to like buy me the giant one. And I was like, vodka ice, vodka wins. You know what I mean? Vodka food, vodka wins. You know, like top ramen, vodka. Little box of pills and my little baggies of fucking pot, right? And like, I'm set, you know what I mean? This is back in the days where your TV was still a box and it had the antenna on there and I'd watch the fucking Simpsons and everything was okay. And we're good, you know? I'd always get that Entenmann's coffee cake too, just the whole thing. Like, that was my fucking jam. That was my life, but I wanted more. And I didn't know how to get there. And I set out all these goals and all these dreams and all these ambitions and I read all these self-help books and I even went to seminars, you know? Like, I was that person that would show up at the seminar and like pay the money and like never come back again. And I went to like, I've been 5 different religions. I started my own religion. Like I, you know what I mean? Like I just knew there was this next place in life I had to get. And I would take the first step into doing something and then there would be no follow through because then I was high or then I was drunk. And when I say high drunk, like it's all the same. I did whatever, you know what I mean? Whatever was in front of me, like I said, you know, I'll do it. And you know, what do you have? Like, what is it? And then there was that. And then I was just back on the couch. You know what I mean? Or I was back at the bar. I was back at the club. I was back at the dealers. I was back on the streets. I was back wherever. And I couldn't, like, what happened to that one thing I was going to do? What happened to this? What happened to that? Oh, yeah, that was last week. I'll get there. You know, and I always had this list that I would write out of all these things I needed to do. And then when my list got really fucked up, it was like, call your mom back. Like, when it has to make the list of your mom who lives in the same city as you to call your mom back, because you suck that bad as a human being and as a child that you can't even pick up the phone and call your mom back. Because I was just so fucking stuck. And I got to the point where I was just so tired and so stuck and so paralyzed in that life. And then even though I was still managing to kind of get to work and do these things, and I made it to the bar. You know, I made it to the bar, but then it was late, and now it's been 2 weeks since I've called her. Now it's really awkward. You know what I mean? So now what do I say? And now she's going to yell at me. Oh, shit, it's been a month. You know, do they even know I'm alive? Does anybody even know I'm alive? And now it's really weird, so now I'm just going to, like, and this was before texting, because that's the pussy way out. Now, hey, Mom, you know what I mean? Like, now you can just, like, send a text. Like, I'm alive, you know? Oh, that's so weird. I sent that to you at 7 p.m., but it didn't go through till 2:30 in the morning. You know, that's weird, you know? You can lie, you know? Like, now it's so easy to just pussy your way out. But back then, I didn't even have a fucking cell phone. Like, that's, like, you know what I mean? Like, for the end of my bottom, I did have a phone. I didn't get a cell phone until like 21 or something. That was like, no, I wasn't sober at 21. Yeah, so anyway, no, I wasn't. I didn't have a phone. I had a landline with an answering machine that played Coldplay. Like, how lame is that? I really needed to get sober, you know? I remember being there for like 4 hours trying to like catch the tape playing at the same time as the answering machine records so I get it right at that one part of the song that I wanted it exactly, but I couldn't call my mom back. You know what I mean? I could do that, but I couldn't call my mom back because I was just loaded and I was so stuck. And I just got tired. I got tired. And like I said, I somehow in the midst of this just darkness, I knew there was something else out there. And I didn't know what it was. And I had looked through, like I said, every different religion. I had looked through every different self-help book. I chanted. I had like little sanctuaries set up in my apartment. I had Buddha on there and I had Lady Guadalupe on there. And I had like everybody. I was like, who were the Smurfs? Like anyone, like whoever it is. You know, help me. I want more. I want more. And I hate myself, but I don't want to hate myself. And I want to die, but I kind of want to live. And I just don't fucking know. I just don't know. And it just got to the point where everything was just gray all the time. Like, I couldn't feel anymore. Even when I would use, drink, whatever, that would give me those feelings, put on my favorite fucking CD. You know what I mean? Like, CDs. Remember those? You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't feel anything anymore. I felt nothing. Even in the moments where I had nothing in my system, like, it didn't matter. I felt nothing. And I wanted to feel something. My sister, She had gotten sober 8 years before me. She just turned 17 years sober, or nine years before me. She just turned 17, and she's my fucking light in my life. Like, she's the most important person to me in the world. You know, I fucking love her so much. And I'd tell her all my stories and all this stuff, and she never pushed this program on me. She never did it. Because like I said, it's based on attraction, not promotion. You know what I mean? And she was attraction because she lived a sober life. And her life changed from like being in jail in Reno in a stolen car, like stripping for the Hells Angels, to fucking like being a mom. Like, those are two different people, you know what I mean? And it wasn't just like, you know, the whole mom part, but like, because that's not too attractive to me, but like the, not there yet, progress, not perfection, but like one day. And she was happy and she smiled. And it wasn't bailing her out of jail, and it wasn't going to the hospital to see if she was going to survive, because she flatlined twice in all the car accidents and DUI. She had gotten a car set on fire. Like, she has a fucking story. And, you know, is Shelly alive? Is Shelly in jail? Where is my sister? It went from that to, like, I always knew where my sister was. And my sister always had a smile on my face. My sister was always there to help me. And she never pushed this program, and she laughed at my fucking stories and said, all right. And she'd laugh and smoke a cigarette with me, and I would tell her about stuff I'm not gonna say here, you know what I mean? Just things, you know, overshare. And so we're just gonna use your imaginations. I'm sure as other alcoholics, you have grand imaginations. And she'd just laugh, and she'd laugh. And then one day, I couldn't do it anymore. I didn't know what I couldn't do. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I didn't know what the problem was. I just knew I couldn't do fucking life anymore. But I was too pussy to kill myself. I just couldn't, I was frozen, I was fucking stuck, and I called her, and I said, I'm broke, man, you know, because that's the only words I can get out of my mouth. It was about money. I was like, I'm broke, and I'm really upset about it, and she was like, uh-huh, and I was like, I'm just actually really, really sad, and I don't know what to do with my life or anything. She goes, well, let's go to lunch. I said, Kay, you paying? She said, yes. So she picked me up, she took me to lunch, and she took me to my first meeting. And I had been to meetings in the past with her when she would celebrate her birthdays, but I was there for the tattooed boys, the cigarettes, and the fucking cake. Because in LA, you get cakes, not chips, like good cakes, too. So the cake, guys, smoking, coffee, like, yes, sign me up. You know what? I'm so happy you guys are sober. I'm going to go drink now, but awesome for you. And I never heard a word because I didn't know I had a problem. But that day she took me to a meeting with like a bunch of like ex, the guys that just got out of prison with no teeth and like all meth addicts. And I was like, my people, you know what I mean? Like I heard their hearts. Like they spoke from their soul. They spoke from their heart, like the feelings. And she told me, she goes, you know, because I was like, I don't know if I'm okay, drugs, like, I can't justify recreational drug use. You know what I mean? Clearly that's a problem. But alcohol, my best friend. Alcohol's been there for me since I was 12. Don't take away my best friend. It's perfect. I don't want to lose it. You know what I mean? She goes, you know what? Don't listen to that. Just listen to the feelings. Just be open and hear the feelings. And I heard the feelings from those guys that day. And I was like, wow, I'm home. I went out and drank. You know what I mean? I'm not going to lie. That was May of 2004. But I went out and continued to drink. And then I got really deep into blow. And this was the best part. I'm sitting there all coked out. And I tell everyone, hey, guys, I'm sober. And they're like, really? And I was like, yeah. You know, this fucking, I went to this meeting, and you know your coke talks where you're all crazy and you think that you're like, you know, got these words of wisdom and you know shit, you think you know shit. And like, so I'm giving them this whole spiel on AA and sobriety and that's where God is and all this stuff I heard from one meeting, right? And like, and I know all about it. I'm like the queen of AA. And like, and they're like, that's amazing. We should go with you. I was like, we should do it tomorrow. Then I couldn't find my car that night. I don't know how I got home. But I ran through it and I took away all the drugs. I had removed the pills and the pot and the coke and the ecstasy and the acid and the, you know, all the extra stuff. And it was just me and alcohol. I said, Kay, just me and you, let's not fuck this up. Well, that didn't last long, because then I drank more than I had ever drank in my life, and it was a lot, it's a lot harder, because when you don't have the coke to help the tolerance whole thing, then it was really messy. Like, it was really, I was just puke girl, you know, because I couldn't stop. I was like, I puke, like, after three drinks, but then I would puke, and then drink, and then puke, and then drink, and then puke, and then drink, and I was like, why can't I stop? And then I knew. And then I went to another meeting in October. Well, my last night out there was, like, October 9th or 10th, and the only way I even knew my sobriety date was I had to find a flyer in my car from a band that I saw that night and see the date of the band that it was, because I couldn't remember much of anything else, but I remember thinking, this is my last fucking drink. I can't do this anymore. And I was happy to know that it's all the same. Whatever form it comes in, it's all the fucking same. And I walked back into a meeting, and I've been there ever since. And it's given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. You know, and I hear people, you know, say, when I first got there, that they were grateful alcoholics. And I remember thinking, like, how the fuck can you be grateful to be an alcoholic? Like, that's a bunch of bullshit. And now today I'm a grateful alcoholic, and I'm grateful because I know what's wrong with me. I'm grateful because I know why my whole life I was searching for something and I didn't know what it was. I was grateful to know why I wanted to live and I wanted to die at the same time, and that's some fucked up bipolar shit going on in your head. I'm grateful to know there's a solution. And I'm grateful to know that I don't ever have to feel that way again. Nobody, no matter who you are or where you came from or how much you did or how little you did or whatever your fucking story is, ever has to feel that way again. Ever. And it's the same. Is this the big book? I hope so, because that'd be weird if it wasn't. you know what I mean? Who knows? Is that like Eckhart Tolle's thing? That book is the same book for every single person. And the same steps and the same program from every person, no matter what your deal is. It's the same solution for all of us. We don't have to go take on more physical exercise, which we're going to do here in about, 6 minutes? I can't add, like, 5?
Math's hard.
Yeah. I still, like I said, progress, not perfection. Can't be pretty and smart. I'm just kidding. Humble, right? And, but you know what I mean? We don't have a different program for each of us. It's the same. Now, clearly, we all have different lives, and we all have different stuff. We've got different sponsors. Some things are different, but the program of Alcoholics Anonymous stays the same. I came into the rooms to take a break. I was tired. I was really tired. And I just came in to just not be tired. I didn't know what I was looking for. I just didn't want to feel that way anymore. And then I got this book. And this chick, and I picked my sponsor because of her shoes. Like, it doesn't matter what it is. She had rad shoes. You know, and they were really fucking cute, and I love her to this day. Jasmine, she was awesome. This is in L.A., and I loved her shoes. But the one thing she had shared about, I remember she had shared, like, she was a 10-minute speaker at this meeting. She talked about making that list. Every day, that to-do list. Like, the call your mom back list, the pay your bills list, the, like, because you couldn't get shit done because all you did was all, oh, I'm drunk again. You know, like, that list, you know? And I was like, I have that list. I have so many of those lists. Like, I had to write them out at night because I couldn't sleep because I couldn't get the voices in my head to shut up. And I read some, like, self-help book that said, if you write it all out, you'll be able to sleep. Well, no, you just get high. And then you go to sleep. But I was somehow managed to make some of those lists. But then on my list, the next thing was, like, make the list. You know what I mean? Like, the list was about making the list again. And she, like, I can't. And I just, I give up. And she had the fucking list, and she had the fucking shoes. And I walked up to her, and I said, will you be my sponsor? I don't know how this works. This is weird. It's like I'm asking you out. Please don't say no. This is really uncomfortable. Like, if you're brand new, like, your first time walking the rooms, it's weird. It's uncomfortable. We're all adults. Like, hey, you want to be friends? Like, let's eat pizza. Like, let's go do stuff. Like, will you be my sponsor? And then you find out your sponsor is, like, the crazy person, and you didn't know. You're like, now I have to get another sponsor because I didn't know my sponsor has, like, 3 days out of the psych ward. They look like they had their shit together. You know what I mean? Like, we go through stuff, and it's weird, and there's these growing pains, you know? But we do it. And she said no. The bitch said no. She said, I have too many sponsees. I can't. And I said, all right. She goes, if I give you this number, will you call this woman? And I said, no, this was hard enough. I'm leaving. She said, fuck, and fine. And that's how it's a perfect relationship from then. She got my glaring character defects right off the bat. I am selfish and self-centered, and I want what I want, and I reach my hand out, and you're trying to give me help somewhere else, and I don't fucking want it. I want you, and if not, I'm going to die. And she's like, you motherfucker, fine, you know? And it was great. And, you know, I got a year with her, and I went through the steps with her, and then she moved out of state, and so I had to get another sponsor, and that was weird. I went like 4 months without one. Don't do that. I was crazy, you know what I mean? And then I got another sponsor, and that was great, and we went through some stuff together, and it was perfect timing. Am I done?
No.
In sobriety, I got diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and that was really hard. It was after I had turned a year. I thought everything was, like, cured in my life, right? Like, I can't have an autoimmune disease that might and put me in a wheelchair like my dad, who's quadriplegic. I have the same disease as him because I'm sober. Sober people, like, we're done. We'd lived the hard stuff. There can't be any more hard stuff. And I was really bummed out, and she had some medical issues that were really intense too, that her alcoholic father had the same. And we got to share that together. And I was fucking terrified at the doctors every day at the hospitals, getting MRIs, staying overnight in the hospitals. Like, I was blind. I was fucking blind. And I stayed sober through it. And they offered me everything. I never got to try Oxy. I got sober before that was all trendy. You know what I mean? I tried enough. And then all of a sudden they're like, here, we will write you a prescription for OxyContin and a prescription for Vicodin and a prescription for Valium. And guess what? In the state of California, we have medical marijuana and it's legal and it's real good. And I'm sitting there and I was like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. I'm sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't have any of that. but I'll take the ibuprofen. 800 milligrams, yo. You know what I mean? Give me the good shit. And I was like, why? What is this? This mean game. And I walked through it. It was so fucking scary. And I walked through it with that woman. And I walked through it. And you know what ended up happening? When you don't fucking use over, because you don't have to fucking use over anything. There's nothing that big that you have to fucking use over, ever. If you want to be sober, you're going to be fucking sober tomorrow. What? Because life's just going to keep fucking happening. And I stayed sober through that. And then all of a sudden, I meet three girls who all get diagnosed with MS and are all new in their sobriety. And guess what I got to do? I got to be of service to them, and I got to walk them through what I went through, and I got to go to their doctor's appointments with them, and I got to hold their fucking hand and tell them that it was going to be okay. Mm-hmm. How can you take something as scary as that? You know, they're scarier diseases, but that one's pretty fucking scary, as that, to being something that became a blessing in my life? Like, I'm grateful to have multiple sclerosis? Like, what kind of crazy shit is that? But it's true, because I got to help somebody else. I got to help a few people with it. And when people walk through that, I get to say, hey, I've been there. And you don't have to drink. You don't have to drink over it. You know what I mean? And it's been the most incredible experience. This is a fucking trip. I love being sober. I love being sober. I love the steps. I love my sponsor. I love my sponsees. I love this fellowship, and I love all of it because today I can do anything in life and be okay. And, you know, like I had said earlier, no matter what happens, even when stuff's not okay, when I'm sober and I'm, like, trying to work this program, because, well, I'm not perfect, you know, even when I suck as a human, because I suck as a human in AA and sobriety sometimes, it happens, we're fucking people, you know what I mean? It's all in there, you know what I mean? And we've got a solution to work on it and clean that shit up. I'm still okay, because I get to clean that stuff up. I get to be sober another day. I get to help another person. I get to ask for help. And I know that there's always going to be someone there that's going to be like, all right, I got you. Because I don't have this anymore. Out there was, I got this. In here is, I don't got this. God's got this. You guys got my back. I got your back. We got this together, but I don't have this on my own anymore. And I'm so grateful to not have to carry around that weight of thinking that it's all fucking on me. Because all on me was going to take me to the fucking grave. And in here, all of us together, like, we get to live another day and we get to have a pretty rad fucking life. And I wouldn't trade that for anything. So I am a grateful alcoholic. I'm grateful for everything that's happened in my life and all the shit I've had to walk through in sobriety because it's made me who I am today and it's given me more experience to be able to help another person. Thank you for letting me share.